Welcome to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota Attorney General Marty Jackley recently hosted the 2016 Presidential Initiative Summit. Attorneys general from across the country gathered in Deadwood this month to address challenging topics within the theme of 21st century community policing. We sat down with Marty Jackley yesterday to talk about community policing, the Keystone XL pipeline project, and his upcoming trip to Israel. I'm hoping we can start out with a little look ahead. You're packing your bags for Israel. Give me an idea of what some of the key issues of that trip will be.
You know, certainly this is one of those opportunities as the chairman of the Attorney General's to lead the delegation over to focus on public safety topics. Obviously, we have an opportunity to meet with the Israeli Attorney General, their Supreme Court, an opportunity to talk about economic development with some of the leaders, including mayors, and really an opportunity to talk a little bit about cybersecurity, something that really every country is facing. We face it here in South Dakota. The group of eight attorney generals that I'm with, each of us almost on a daily basis have some type of a security issue coming up either in our consumer division or, you know, as representatives of our states, different entities. And then really, I think probably the overall goal of the trip is for the attorney generals, as well as any elected officials and leaders, to recognize and foster U.S.-Israeli relations. And that's kind of really been a focal point of every 2 years, having a delegation of attorney generals to go over and work with the Israeli government on a variety of different issues and challenges that face both countries.
Have you been there before yourself?
I have not.
So how do you judge personally then? How do you prepare for that personally? Do you have an agenda that you're hoping to kind of follow, or are you just going to go and sort of see what comes up?
No, and I put a lot of time in it. As the leader of the delegation, it's important that I have a strong grasp of those relations that we share, the United States and Israel, to have an understanding of some of the leaders that we'll be meeting with and the topics of importance. And so my preparation began with some reading. I was fortunate enough to have a debriefing. I reached out to a couple of trusted friends in South Dakota that had been there repeatedly, had them help me better understand the process. Then I work with the National Attorney General's Association to make sure they're providing the agenda and the literature. Because of security reasons for both some of the attorney generals that are on the trip, as well as some of the Israeli leaders, it's a very general agenda, so we're not able to say exactly when and where we're at, other than, you know, certainly the hope to be with the Prime Minister, to be with the Attorney General, to be with their Supreme Court.
How do you process something like that when it's over on your travels home? And that's kind of a personal question, but there's a lot of information thrown at you. How do you sort of process it on your way back?
You know, part of the, having done this once before, I had an opportunity to go to Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that upon the return, really communicating and talking it over with the other attorneys general on the trip probably was one of the big advantages. Obviously, in flights, you have a lot of time together to both process and talk about what are ideas we want to bring back to our states, what are ideas we want to talk about collectively as the nation's attorney generals, opportunities that we may have. You know, certainly countries share a lot of the same challenges we have with addiction, cybersecurity, and they're all sharing of ideas and then really processing what is practical for us to bring back home to improve, whether it be public safety, economic development, or cybersecurity.
What does that cybersecurity conversation sound like right now, and how quickly has it evolved?
You know, we had a good conversation about that here in South Dakota several weeks ago when all of the nation's attorney generals came to South Dakota to have the discussion about data security, security breaches. A lot of the discussion is centering upon what can we do to prevent. Oftentimes the attorney general community is stuck in the place, once there's a breach, being responsible for the criminal action. We're looking maybe prospectively forward. How can we be a part of the discussion about ensuring that there's adequate protections in place? And we're trying to be a bigger part of that, especially our consumer divisions. Whenever there is a breach, whether it be of a consumer-related or one of, you know, national-type security or the IRS, it seems like our consumer divisions are at the front line, trying to tell the public, this is what you need to do to protect your information, So we're trying to be a part of that, but also making sure that we do everything we can on the prevention end. Some of the attorney generals, I have not been one of those attorney generals, have wanted certain data breach notification requirements, certain protocols. We've been very fortunate in South Dakota that we haven't had the need whenever there's been either a Target situation or Neiman Marcus or a local vendor. We logically, the Attorney General and the Consumer Division is where they turn to. And so we haven't really seen the need for more laws. I look at more of what can we do to make sure we have in place those protections and make sure that we are, as a Consumer Division, doing everything we can to educate small businesses and others about what they can do to protect their sensitive information.
And how are we doing in that conversation? Are we on our heels trying to kind of play catch up, or are we pretty much holding pace with things as they change and evolve?
I think we're very fortunate in South Dakota, and some of it is because when you look at some of our higher educational learning places, such as at Dakota State and Madison, you've got obviously SDSU and School of Mines on the engineering side. You know, we're kind of the leaders almost nationally when it comes to technology. We have some of the largest businesses also find home in South Dakota, whether it be Citigroup or other type businesses, that having had the opportunity as Attorney General to view what they put in place for security, it's impressive. And I think that's part of the reason we're leading the discussion on what needs to happen nationally and why I've felt here in South Dakota we haven't needed a bunch of government, a bunch of rules on data breaches. We need to really look for solutions.
Let's look back a little bit. Instead of looking forward to Israel, let's look back to Deadwood and the 2016 Presidential Initiative Summit, National Association of Attorneys General. You want to give us some of the highlights that might be particularly of interest to South Dakotans that were discussed at that conference?
Sure. You know, one of the nicest things that I saw is how well South Dakota really took care of the attorney generals, whether it was up in Deadwood or Mount Rushmore or Crazy Horse. From all the staffing of the meals, everybody was impressed, and I had so many attorney generals say, you know, what a great state to live in. And so I think the meeting went very well. The topics that we chose, that 21st century policing, were challenging topics. If we had attorney generals that had been, you know, in the trenches dealing with officer-involved shootings, campus sexual assaults, addiction, mental illness, the data breach issues. And so these were topics that were really meant to challenge the attorney generals. We had good discussions. South Dakota has really become one of the leaders in the officer-involved shooting discussions on how we've handled it as a state, the transparency that we have, the ability to bring in agencies that were not involved in a particular shooting. And so I think overall the meeting went well. I mean, certainly when Governor and former Attorney General Farrar kicked us off originally to have a former Attorney General and Governor come in and indicating that weekend he had just done a triathlon and he flew himself to the meeting and he was Attorney General back in 1963 was impressive. And then Senator Rounds addressed everybody at Mount Rushmore, and it was a good meeting.
Huh. Let's talk a little bit more about officer-involved shootings, because you were moderator of that panel, correct?
That is correct.
How much has that conversation changed in recent years?
You know, it's evolved. Certainly, there's an ongoing conversation about both transparency and then the procedure, whether you use a grand jury like people saw in Ferguson, which is a secretive process, or whether it's a more open process. And so you see almost a disagreement on how it's evolved. I think what I've tried to advocate to the other attorneys general, and I'm going to have an opportunity to speak to the nation's district attorneys here in a couple more weeks, is the plan that we have here in South Dakota, where we are transparent. Everybody in South Dakota knows when we have an officer-involved shooting, within 30 days you'll hear from the attorney general. There'll be a summary, a press release. Now, there may be more work to do, more investigation, but everybody anticipates and knows that we'll be open about it. And the other part of it that I think is huge is the fact that we involve several local and state agencies that were not tied to the shooting, so that it has the perception of being fair. And I've been trying to advocate the need for really that dual investigation for perception purposes and fairness, as well as that need for transparency. And that's why here in South Dakota, I've tried to talk to legislators about the dangers. If we just simply use grand jury, that's a secretive process, and nobody will get to find out about the specifics of what happened, which I think leads to further problems. And And really, the prosecutor that did Ferguson, I had an opportunity to be on a panel with that state's attorney, and he talked about how all the rioting was going on, all the problems were arising, and of course they've got grand jury that they're waiting for a decision, and then they have to wait for the court to ultimately really redact out what the public can see and what they can't see. And so I just think that there's better processes, and that's been a large part of the discussion.
What kind of feedback have you gotten from South Dakota law enforcement, you know, Fraternal Order of Police or whomever, about how it's handled in South Dakota? How do they feel about it?
I think they feel strongly that they like the protocols that we have in place. I mean, to be able to, you know, have the DCI, the Division of Criminal Investigation, come in and partner with another agency that was not involved in the shooting just simply makes sense. Mm-hmm. That way everybody plays a part in that discussion. And then to have that final report go to both the attorney general as well as the elected state's attorney of whatever county that happens in, we both have that concurrent or dual jurisdiction. And so you really almost have four added protections. You have the DCI, you have a local, at least one, and oftentimes more than one, local law enforcement agency, a state's attorney, and the attorney general. So you put in four layers of protection.
Hmm. What can the media do better in covering those kind of incidents?
My experience, we've had 24 officer-involved shootings since I have become attorney general. I think the media accepts that it will take about 30 days at least before we're able to give an idea of whether or not the shooting was appropriate or what other actions are going to happen. You know, I've been very happy with that understanding, and the media always is given that time, I think, because they understand that it needs to be due diligence and an appropriate investigation, and we don't want to get too far out on front. So I've been very happy with the way the media has treated law enforcement and helped us through the investigations, and really has shown that patience with the understanding within that 30 days that the media and the public needs to hear from the attorney general what is occurring in any particular instance of an officer-involved shooting.
Let's pick one more topic from the summit. I'm thinking mental health and substance abuse. Do you want to talk about that, or do you have something else that you think might be more relevant?
You know, certainly when you talk about substance abuse and mental illness, it's something that every state is dealing with. You know, here in South Dakota, we have a meth epidemic, and we're starting to see more and more heroin use. And other state attorney generals have already been through this and are dealing with this. And so part of what we were able to do in South Dakota is have that discussion. What has worked in other states? Certainly Wisconsin is a leader in the anti-heroin movement. Montana is one of those leaders in the anti-methamphetamine movement. We're able to learn from that and then have a good discussion, too, about how mental illness has played into this whole discussion. And when you talk about officer-involved shootings before, when you look at the 24 shootings we've had, over half of those have dealt with controlled substances or mental illness. And so certainly those areas spill over into a lot of violence. And I think that those are areas that all the attorney generals are working towards solutions. Our solution here in South Dakota is an anti-heroin and anti-meth campaign that is moving forward this summer. And on the mental illness side, the Chief Justice in the South Dakota Supreme Court get the credit. Working with the legislature, the Attorney General is going to be part of that summer study group to address mental illness that oftentimes goes back into that addiction side of things.
What are we learning from states like Wisconsin or Montana who might be on the forefront of some kind of prevention? What are we learning that we can bring back to our state?
You know, one of the things that we're learning is that we need to start young. And that becomes challenging because oftentimes we want to think it starts at the college or high school level. Unfortunately, what we're learning from those other states is we're going to have to go younger, maybe even looking at grade school and certainly middle school. The other thing that we're learning is we need to use the new technology, the social media, as a part of any campaign. And that finally, we can't just have it done by law enforcement. It needs to be really an all-stakeholders effort of law enforcement, community service groups. Education needs to play a huge role in that. That's both the school system as well as parents, and then the private sector. And so as we roll this out this summer, you're going to see kind of aspects of all the stakeholders coming together and providing resources and providing help in addressing addiction here in South Dakota.
Is awareness the main catch here, that if we have greater awareness at younger ages, we see a decrease in substance abuse?
It is. I mean, obviously there needs to be prevention, treatment, and reasonable enforcement. Mm-hmm. And we think we need to focus in pretty heavily upon the prevention side of things. And when you look at that prevention, again, it needs to start very young. I just had an opportunity to go to, we call it Freshman Impact, was held in Pierre, where the seniors really work to reenact an accident, a DUI or a controlled substance accident. This particular one, it involved both, for the freshmen to see and to see how serious it is. And so these type of programs will be kind of tied into that awareness. But what we're finding is, again, that we're probably going to have to look at middle school and maybe even certain instances, particularly with alcohol tied to it, maybe even a little younger.
Is that because that's where it starts? Or is that just, is there another reason why it's effective at a younger age? I mean, are they starting younger?
They're starting younger, and part of that is an access issue. Part of it is peer pressure. Part of it is, you know, availability. And our concern is, as we look at some of the juvenile arrest numbers, what we're talking to certain schools, we're finding that kids are starting to experiment earlier in life, and we need to make sure we're doing everything we can to show them the dangers of that, especially when it comes to some of these drugs like methamphetamine that are so addictive. You can literally try meth once and you become addicted. And so the goal is to, number one, stop that from ever happening. And then if it does happen, to make sure that we've got adequate treatment in place and reasonable enforcement.
Let's talk a little bit about the legal defense of Keystone Pipeline. Explain to me exactly what it means to join a multi-state friend of the court brief.
When you look at the Keystone Pipeline, obviously it's been in the press a lot in South Dakota. You had our regulators, which is the PUC, grant the permitting process. Our governor, our two senators, and Representative Noem had all supported the Keystone Pipeline. What had happened is the president, through really executive order, and you're seeing more and more of the president using that executive authority or executive orders, has really delayed or stopped the pipeline. So the group of states affected by the pipeline, when it comes to economic development, jobs, have filed what's called an amicus brief or friend of the court brief in some litigation that's occurring. And so it was Kansas, Montana, Nebraska, Oklahoma, of course South Dakota, and Texas, saying that this is an issue under the law that has been relegated to either Congress or maintained with the states. And so what we're arguing is it's not in the power or authority of the president to do this. He's taking away congressional or state authority. The gist of the briefing provides that the states are empowered to regulate and permit economic activity within their borders. But throughout the Constitution, the states did cede to Congress the power to regulate commerce with foreign nations, et cetera. And what it didn't say is we didn't cede that power to the president. And that's kind of the gist of what the states are arguing. It's a constitutional argument. It's one that oftentimes is heard on a variety of these different cases, whether it be in relation to the EPA, it may be in a relation to guns, to some of the transgender issues. It's the Attorney General saying the president is going too far with his authority. It's either taking away from the states or Congress, and in this instance, we're arguing in the Keystone Pipeline, it's taking the power away from both Congress and the states.
What's at stake here economically for South Dakota?
You know, certainly it's economic development. It's jobs. I mean, part of the responsibility of the Attorney General is not to just speak of policy. Part of the responsibility is to say the policymakers get to make that decision. And, of course, the policymakers of that in South Dakota are the PUC because they grant the permits and the governor. And so my position is to say legally the PUC and the governor were right and to make sure legally what they're seeking to do happens. And as a part of that responsibility, it is to find that legal argument. And this one, again, is that simply the president of the United States has gone beyond his power in the Constitution. And, of course, if a president doesn't have these enumerated powers, then they rest back upon the states.
Can you articulate the argument from the other side for me?
You know, I've had a hard time as we engage in all of these different lawsuits, whether it's Waters of the United States, whether it's Keystone, whether it's particular Second Amendment rights. I mean, we rarely ever use governor executive powers here in South Dakota. And if you think about it, we have a citizen legislature that meets 40 days a year, and we haven't felt the need to exercise that kind of power. I think what oftentimes we're seeing from the Attorney General of the United States or the Solicitor General is arguing, well, maybe legally we don't have all that authority, but we've done it this way in the past. Or sometimes we'll face an argument that, well, Congress hasn't acted, so the president had to. I'm not convinced just because Congress may or may not be doing what it's supposed to be doing, all of a sudden transfers that power over to a president. And so those are some of the legal arguments that you really hear in all of these different areas, whether it be, again, Waters of the United States, that clean power, clean coal arguments, some of the Second Amendment rights issues, and now Keystone.
So is this an environmental issue, or is this a states' rights issue?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, certainly we've taken the position that on the environment, it's really the authority to do some of that protection rests with the PUC and the permitting process, our governor, who obviously appoints the secretary of DENR. So those issues in protecting the environment should be done and looked after on the state level. Also that, you know, our position, and we lay it out in the briefs, that the environment is protected, at least is decided to by Congress, decided to by our governors, decided to by our regulatory agencies. And so that is really part of the argument.
You mentioned transgender legislation. When you look at what happened in South Dakota and where things went with the transgender bathroom bill, and then you look at what's happening in other states, do you see landmines that we avoided?
Well, certainly the president, when he had indicated that there would be a, you know, that every school district in a nation had to take certain steps, or there would likely be either a civil rights lawsuit or withholding of educational funds to our children, has put it back on essentially the front page, or back on, you know, the need for something to be done about it at the state level. Now, certainly the group of attorney generals have been discussing what would be appropriate. I would anticipate in some states you're going to see additional litigation. You know, my position has been this, that the president does not have the authority to tell either the state of South Dakota or our school districts that children of opposite sex can be in their bathrooms and locker rooms together, that is strictly a function for either our state lawmakers or our school districts. So by taking that position, though, obviously I'm putting it back on the school districts as well as the state lawmakers that they have the authority to address it. Whether or not the president is ultimately going to withhold those education funds or file lawsuits against various states is yet to be seen. I mean, I think it was very clear from a majority of states, Republican and Democrat, they took the similar position that the president does not have the authority to tell either state lawmakers or school districts that children of opposite sex can use certain bathrooms and locker rooms.
So what sort of philosophy do you bring forward into our next legislative session? Because it's a topic that will probably come up again regarding transgender rights and privacy rights.
Well, part of my responsibility of Attorney General is to address the authority issue. In other words, by the time we reach the next legislative session, if the president is going to move forward on either withholding of education funds or, obviously, if he brings a lawsuit, we'll be defending it, is to address the legal side of it. By that time, I would guess that it's sorted out, and so I'll be able to come to the legislature and indicate, here's where the courts are at on it, here's your level of authority and responsibility, and then let the lawmakers, as the policymakers, decide to what degree PEER is going to tell school districts what to do, or whether school districts are going to handle the issue.
Attorney General Jack Lee, thank you so much for your time today. Was there anything else that you wanted to cover?
I think you have it all covered, and I appreciate it as always.
Journey well, and we'll see you when you get back.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.